Now, the United States Treasury Department announced sanctions this morning against Russian individuals and organizations because of meddling in the 2016 election and other Russian cyber attacks. In a statement released by the department, the U.S. is targeting 5 groups and 19 people with these sanctions. Some lawmakers, including House Speaker Paul Ryan, called the restrictions long overdue. Our next guest is here to talk about the sanctions and what impact they could have on U.S.-Russia relations. Keith Darden is a professor in the School of International Service at American University. Keith, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me back, Rob.
Keith, can you talk about what these sanctions do and what impact they might have?
Primarily, the sanctions are focused on 2 organizations. One is the Internet Research Agency, which was identified in the Mueller indictment of a couple of weeks ago as the primary actor that was running the cyber operations trying to influence public opinion in the 2016 U.S. presidential elections. And that was funded, that effort was funded by a man named Yevgeny Prigozhin. And almost all of these entities have previously been sanctioned. Prigozhin was under sanctions. The Internet Research Agency itself was not, but some of the entities that were involved in the manipulation of the elections in 2016 were already sanctioned. The other main target of the sanctions is Russia's military intelligence. So both the military intelligence organization itself and several top officials in the GRU, so the main intelligence directorate, which is the main organ of Russian military intelligence, were sanctioned in this round of sanctions. And that was partially for involvement in the 2016 elections, partially involvement for a major cyber attack that took place in 2017.
And now the Internet Research Agency is one thing. It was funded by a guy, I think that's the guy known as Putin's chef for kind of a longstanding joke sort of. But the military intelligence agency, I mean, that is a state actor. It's directly connected to the Russian government. There's not that a window of deniability there, right?
Right. I mean, the deniability was sort of implausible with Putin's chef, with Prigozhin as well, because this is a person who, you know, was running a small restaurant in St. Petersburg and ultimately became a billionaire through state contracts that were handed to him by Putin. And he does all sorts of things for Putin. He's the one who built Russian military bases just outside the Ukrainian border that have been staffing some of the Donbass separatists. He's also involved with the mercenaries that are in Syria. He's very much what we would call a cutout for the Russian government, sort of a private actor, but not really private.
Do these sanctions do anything really significant to punish people involved in election interference and other cyber attacks, which we can get to, and to deter future efforts?
You know, it cuts them off from much of the international economy. But, you know, when you're a senior Russian military intelligence officer, you're not terribly connected to the international economy anyway. So I think and many of those people were already under sanction. You know, only a couple of names are new in this list. And so we know the sanctions haven't deterred their activity to date. So it's not likely to have a significant effect. And sanctioning a few additional people who are employees of the Internet Research Agency, again, not likely to have much of an impact.
A lot of the talk here in the U.S. has been about these sanctions as they relate to 2016 election interference. But a big part of it, cited by the Treasury Department, is the cyber attack called NotPetya back in the summer of last year. Can you talk about that attack and the scope of it a little?
Sure. I rely on government sources, but this was the largest or most expensive, the costliest cyber attack in history. It started as an attack on Ukraine that they essentially embedded software in the Ukrainian tax website. So anybody who was going to get information to file their taxes would have been infected with this software. And it mimicked a software that was a ransomware, in other words, that would ask people to pay money in order to get their data back. But in fact, it had no intention of giving people their data back and was erasing data for any machine that was infected. And it spread beyond Ukraine to the United States and the UK and other European countries, shut down hospitals, schools. It was a terribly costly and devastating attack.
Talking to Keith Darden from American University about new U.S. sanctions against Russian individuals and organizations related to cyber attacks and interference in the U.S. election. And Keith, a new big international story that's adding another wrinkle to this, the apparent assassination attempt of a Russian who had spied on Russians now living in the U.K., a nerve agent apparently used. Big diplomatic tiff now between the U.K. and Russia, France, the U.S. kind of signing on behalf of the U.K. here. To talk about that story and what, if anything, it changes.
So I think, you know, and that's clearly related to the sanctions, the timing of this round of sanctions, which the Trump administration had really been putting off. You know, they're really just trying to send a signal that they're doing something, because it's clear that the Russians were involved in some way in this attack in the U.K. You know, a nerve agent that was developed by Soviet military chemists was employed. Very few people would have had access to something like this. It's in principle possible that, you know, sometime in the period after the collapse of the Soviet Union, some criminal organization could have gotten their hands on these materials. But this is very unlikely. It seems really that the Putin government was sending a signal that we, you know, almost like a mafia organization, you know, it's a very distinctive killing or attempted killing, which attributes, says basically, you know, you can't hide from us. And we have this capability and we're willing to use it. So in some ways, it's related to the Putin speech of a couple of weeks ago, where he, you know, showed all of these new technologies, new missiles, new nuclear weapons. It's a way of saying, you know, we still have chemical and biological weapons capabilities, too, and we're not afraid to use them on foreign soil.
With all this concern over that attack, the cyber attacks, can you talk about how the U.S. and Russia can be talking about important issues like what's going on in Ukraine and avoiding escalation there? What's going on in Syria and avoiding, you know, U.S. and Russian personnel shooting at each other there?
Yeah, so the dialogue is still open, both on Ukraine and on Syria. And, you know, we may be coming closer to some kind of agreement on Ukraine that will help stabilize that conflict. But really, Ukraine is in a situation now where the Russian government has been seeking to destabilize the Ukrainian government. And if that goes too far, you know, Russia's going to have a real crisis on its hands. You know, Ukraine's a very large country, tens of millions of people. You really don't want that collapsing on your border. The Russians have been pushing for a UN-monitored ceasefire line along the territory between the Donbass separatists and the government-controlled forces. The U.S. and the Ukrainian government would like to see that line extended to the Ukrainian-Russian border, and that's not likely to happen. But there might be some room for agreement in an effort to reduce the killing there. In Syria, you know, while we have dialogue with the Russians, they also supported a group of mercenaries who attacked a U.S. special operations base a couple of weeks ago. And that unit was, we informed the Russians that we were aware of what those mercenaries were doing. We warned them off, and then ultimately they were pretty much annihilated by U.S. air power.
So that seems like in either of those situations, maybe more so Syria now, there is a risk of things spiraling out of control on the ground.
Absolutely, because, you know, why would the Russians test us in that way? You know, what could be the motivation to send a group of, you know, semi-officially sanctioned Russian mercenaries against U.S. troops? That's a direct confrontation between the United States and Russian forces. That wasn't invited by us. It wasn't initiated by us. And we were communicating with them about it, but they still went ahead. And so those are very disturbing signs, much as this assassination attempt in the U.K.
We're talking to Keith Darden. He's a professor in the School of International Service at American University. He's with us to talk about sanctions the U.S. imposed on Russian individuals and groups earlier today, in part for meddling in the 2016 election, also for cyber attacks in Ukraine and elsewhere. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this decision by the Trump administration to impose these sanctions? Do you think they go too far, or are you looking for more from the Trump White House? What impact does this all have on U.S. foreign relations? And what are you watching for in the probe of Russian efforts to interfere in the 2016 election? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about the sanctions the U.S. imposed against Russian entities and individuals this morning related to meddling in the 2016 election, cyber attacks, and more. We're joined by Keith Darden. He's professor in the School of International Service at American University. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about these sanctions and the timing of the sanctions? Were you hoping to see more from the Trump administration, or do you think we're doing too much to put pressure on the Russians? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Email ideas@WPR.org. We'll go to our callers now. Willem is with us in Colfax. Willem, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that the Russians never have stopped meddling in our democracy. They're not waiting for the 2016 election. They're involved in this release the memo thing with the Russian bots traced to Russia. And I don't think they've ever stopped meddling in our democracy or in Europe or anywhere else. And I think Putin is, he's schooled since he was a young man in the art of deception, working in the KGB and now the FSB, and now as president of the Soviet Union. I feel like we're playing, he's playing chess and we're playing checkers, because our president, frankly, I don't think is up to the job.
Well, thanks for the call. First of all, Keith, can you talk about ongoing Russian efforts since the 2016 elections here in the United States?
Sure. Your caller, Willem, is absolutely right. And in fact, the worry is not just that he's playing chess and we're playing checkers, is that he's playing chess and, our president is one of his pawns. But I think that the point that Russia has interfered in our democracy and the Soviet Union interfered in our democracy is absolutely right. I think that they've developed more effective techniques, in part, something like the Internet Research Agency, which was subject to these sanctions, was not developed for influencing our elections. It was developed for influencing their elections and their public opinion. And so the skill that they have in making stories salient on Twitter and Facebook or Vkontakte, which is their version of Facebook, and they really have gotten good at this. And so that's new. Hacking emails, they've done for quite some time, but releasing those emails publicly in an effort to discredit one of the candidates to sway an election, that's also new. So I think it's absolutely correct that they have been trying to manipulate U.S. elections for quite some time. They just seem to have upped their game a bit, in part because they are manipulating their own elections. And that's something the Soviet Union didn't have to do.
Thanks for the call, Willem. We'll go next to John in Madison. John, hi.
Hi. Good afternoon. I had a brief comment and a question. I'm suspicious of the Trump administration following through on the sanctions. So I'm wondering if there's an objective mechanism that the Trump administration cannot influence that will give us an accurate reading of whether or not these sanctions are actually being followed through, if the mechanisms in government are actually following through on the sanctions. And I'll just hang up and listen to the response.
John, thanks for the call. Keith, are there ways to know if these sanctions are actually sanctionifying?
So there are. I mean, we pursue cases, and the Treasury Department has been quite aggressive. It's interesting that the Europeans, although the Europeans imposed many of the same sanctions that we did, they have never sanctioned one of their companies. In other words, but the United States has, and so there is a legal record of the U.S. government taking action against entities that trade with some of these Russian actors that are on the sanctions list. And so I think we are quite serious about it. And, companies, once this becomes the law, companies are quite careful doing their own due diligence to make sure that they are not in violation of the sanctions, almost to the point of, doubling the effect of the sanctions, sort of going beyond what the sanctions explicitly prohibit in an effort to stay out of legal trouble.
John, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Alicia calling from Milwaukee. Alicia, hi.
Hi, Hi. I do have an appreciation for the question that the gentleman asked about some form of objective mechanism in which to determine that these sanctions are actually being upheld. However, at what point do we say, okay, I am tired of you insulting our intelligence, and we look at things for what they are and recognize that they are trying to recreate things so that you do have oligarchs in control. You do have people sitting here that are barely making $15 an hour and trying to get to a point where they can raise their family and feed their family without all of this unnecessary drama. I mean, it's simply a case, what I'm looking at here, that they're creating problems that we've already solved, and now we're going back instead of forward. So,
Alicia, thanks. Thanks for the call. If I get her right, Keith, she's saying that Putin's government and his efforts are trying to support an idea of oligarchy and inequality. I hope I'm not putting words in Alicia's mouth, in other countries around the world. Do you see that?
Yes, I think that's one of the, you know, the ways that they can have influence is that, you know, and that's sort of their read on politics more generally, that, you know, they sort of see every country as an oligarchy, and they kind of work with you know, private actors in an effort to manipulate state actors. So I think that's right, that may be one of the ways that they target our democracy. And yes, it's extremely frustrating. And I think the British are really reaching that point now. You know, this is not the first time, not the second time, not the third time that the Russians have killed someone on their soil or attempted to kill someone on their soil. And I think, you know, the repeated denials are starting to be met with a, you know, we've kind of had it, and, you know, we're going to start taking more aggressive action.
Talking to Keith Darden from American University about the U.S., Russia, and some new sanctions. We'll go back to your calls now. Steve is on the line in Sun Prairie. Steve, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, I think it was 2012 when Obama was running against Romney, and Romney brought up the Russians as being a problem, and pretty much universally was condemned by Obama himself during the debate, and then the media as a whole saying how the Cold War was over. So my question is what happened since that time when Obama said the Russians weren't an issue at all? And then it seems like a lot of the things the Russians have been doing has been to divide us. And you can go back to the war on women, you can talk Black Lives Matter, even the walkout yesterday. It just seems all this resistance and everything is feeding into exactly what the Russians want, which is a divided populace.
Steve, thanks for the call. A couple points there I want to get into, Keith. Mitt Romney was warning about this in the presidential election. Then President Obama running for re-election seemed to downplay Russia. Did the Obama administration not do enough on the Russian issue?
There's no question that the Obama administration underestimated Russia. And comments such as, you know, referring to Russia as a regional player or a bit player, these are the things that really aggravated Putin and led to, in some ways, more aggressive behavior on his part. But they were engaged in an expensive redevelopment of their military going back into 2008. You know, this is definitely something that we could have seen coming. And really, Mitt Romney does look a lot smarter in retrospect than he did when he made that comment. It really was right that Russia was preparing for a set of actions that we're seeing come to fruition now. And we didn't really address that. I think it really accelerated after events in Ukraine, so that in many ways, events that we weren't responsible for, but the Russians believed us to be responsible for, that is the ouster of Viktor Yanukovych, really pushed them over the edge in terms of seeing the West as a threat and wanting to take more and more extreme actions in their mind to push back against us.
And then to Steve's point about Russian goals of creating divisions in the U.S., it wasn't just election stuff. There were a lot of things online where it turns out Russian, say, Twitter feeds and things like that would support both sides of a controversial debate. We're even seeing evidence that those accounts were weighing in on riots in Milwaukee, for example. Can you briefly touch on that part of the Russian program?
Yes, and they're doing this in Europe as well. I think their view is that they were facing a united West and that they wanted to divide these countries internally and amongst themselves. So the more they can split off Hungary and Poland from Germany and France, the more that, you know, so Brexit was also something that they apparently invested heavily in promoting. And yes, you're right, they've invested an effort to sort of split Americans along key cleavage issues. Now, we created those cleavage issues. It's not like the Russians invented Black Lives Matter or our, you know, history of racial problems, but they are pouring gasoline on those flames very deliberately, and it's something we need to be cautious about.
Keith, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Keith Darden, professor in the School of International Service at American University. He joined us today to talk about sanctions the U.S. imposed on Russian groups and individuals this morning over their meddling in the 2016 election and other international cyber attacks. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, it looks like a plan to close the state's youth prison may be falling short in the legislature. We'll talk to a state lawmaker who's been pushing for big changes about what happened and what happens next. A guest takes us on a tour of endangered species of the upper Midwest. And on Food Friday, our guest shares great recipes to bring to potlucks and other gatherings. Plus, we'll meet a Milwaukee native who started making music on a video game program and is now a producer of R&B music in Los Angeles. That and a look at some of the top stories of the day and our weekly roundup of what's been going on in Wisconsin news and politics. It's all coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.